Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome back. Great to have you with us on this Tuesday. Tony Knapp, final half hour. We're going to concentrate on Penn State football this half hour with Mike Gross from Lancaster. Get his feelings on the upcoming season. The opener will be Saturday night in Beaver Stadium at 7:30, on at 6 on Eagle 107. And today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, online at sunburymotors.com. Ford, Kia, Hyundai, the best in new inventory with great warranties, end-of-the-year deals as well. Check out the prices. And fabulous pre-owned vehicles with the Sunbury Motors guarantee. They go over every vehicle. And the service department, second to none, taking care of the life of the vehicle from the routine to the difficult. It's all at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Mike Gross in a few moments, but first our play-by-play call of the day. We go back to the weekend. Ricky Fowler, it's always great when you can make eagle from the bunker.
At 11.
Down there in one of these very deep bunkers, front of the par three. He wouldn't have been able to see that, but he certainly knows the result. Even par on his round. Two under total. Good to see Ricky Fowler. What a year it's been for him, bouncing back.
Ian Baker Finch with the call on CBS, the lead-in by Jim Nance. And that was during the PGA Tour Championship. And Ricky Fowler was able to knock down an eagle from the bunker. Eagle's great anytime. Bunker, that's the ultimate save right there. All right, let's turn our attention to Penn State football. It's always great to spend some time with Mike Gross from Lancaster. Mike, great to have you back. So
That's good. You sound good.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting year in a lot of ways. So what has been your read to this point on what we could see?
I would say that this is, I think there's a lot of hype for this Penn State team, obviously. You don't need me to tell you that. But I think the reason for it is two sort of interconnected things, which is depth and star power. I think this Penn State team, I don't know, I'm sure you're aware of Bruce Feldman's freak list. Bruce Feldman is the national college football writer for The Athletic, but he has this list of 101 players that he considers to be the craziest, most athletic, off-the-chart talents in the country. Of those 100 kids, six of them are from Penn State, more than any other program, and a couple of them might not even start.
Right.
So that's an idea of both the star and none of the six are named Drew Aller. So that gives you a sense of that's sort of a short version of the depth and the star power that this team has, which is why people are so excited.
Mike, you have written about seasons leading in that didn't have expectations. You've written about seasons leading in that have expectations. Give us the writer's approach to each as to how you view expectations, whether they're lacking or explosive.
Yeah, I think one of the it's funny because I'm working on the big Penn State season preview, which will go in this Sunday. So I'm working on that right now. So I'm kind of thinking about that exact question. You were pressing to ask that question. I think it's in this case with a lot of expectations. I think you look at I get why the anticipation is so great, but what are some potential flies in the ointment? What are some things that could go wrong? Because there's so many moving parts on a football team that, of course, there's always something like that for everybody, even for Georgia. So I think it's almost. It's almost an opposite thing. If the expectations are super high, then you sort of look at, well, here's how they should be tempered or why they should be tempered, and maybe the other way around when the expectations are not as high.
Interesting. Very interesting. All right. So when you look at the expectations of this team, all right, what are a couple of items that are running through your mind where you would, until you see performance on the field, maybe an area or two that should be tempered?
Yeah, one is, and this is one that nobody has talked about much, is the specialists, the kickers and the punters. And there's not much to say about it. The ball either goes through the uprights or it doesn't, and it's the guys that are going to be doing it are mostly, I think, unknown quantities at this point. But, that's a very critical area that could cost you a game if it goes off the rails. I'm not saying it will, but, again, it's kind of hard to talk about and write about because we just don't know anything about. We just don't know enough about these guys. And another one would be, the specific position groups where, for example, defensive tackle, losing Mustafa. Mm-hmm. You not only lost a great player, you lost a leader and a guy who brought a lot to the table. Same thing with Jair Brown in the safety group. Not only an excellent player, but a leader and a playmaker and a really dynamic guy. And maybe in the wide receiver group, what Jahan Dotson brought. Those things. I'm not saying Penn State doesn't have those things. I'm saying, let's see, and particularly at safety and I would say at all three of those position groups, they have a lot of depth. They have a lot of athletes. I mean, they have a lot of defensive tackles. They have a lot of guys that are good candidates to be safeties, and needless to say, they have like a dozen guys that are in the stampede at wide receivers. So again, depth and star power, I think in those areas where maybe they don't have an obvious standout, they do have some depth, and let's let them sort of compete with each other and figure it out.
The other part is we know what the schedule happens to be. You don't know what the personnel grouping is going to be like on each particular week. But when you look at how the schedule lays out, does it lay out in such a way that it gives a team a chance, if they are that good, to then meet expectations? Just the layout of it.
Yeah, that's an interesting question because I think, for example, week three, that's kind of a tough game at Illinois against a team that knows how to defend, and they might not be quite as good defensively based on what's coming back as they were last year. And I mean, they were a tough out last year, and you're going into their place. I think that would be a tough spot, but overall. And I just did the Big Ten preview last week, so I was looking at everybody's schedule, and I think their schedule is relatively manageable. It's not easy. It's not going to be easy. A lot of the Las Vegas contingent thinks that Maryland, for example, is a very scary game on the road against a team that has a quarterback. Now, you may remember last year, Penn State dominated that game on the line of scrimmage to the point where the quarterback was pretty negated and was running for his life, I think the schedule is okay. I think there are some teams in the Big Ten that have tougher schedules. I think there are some that have a little bit easier paths.
When you were doing the Big Ten preview, give me a couple of elements that stuck out to you about other teams within the conference that really caught your eye.
Well, for example, I do each division and I do them in order of my predicted finish. Okay, so I was not expecting. I picked Iowa to win the West, and I was not expecting to do that going in, remembering just how brutal they were offensively last year. Yeah. I mean, they were. A couple times I watched some of their games. Oh my God, they were. It's hard to believe how bad they were. But they have 10 starters back on offense and a new quarterback, the Michigan transfer, who's a pretty good player. So, and they should be about as good defensively, and their special teams are as good as anybody's. So I think Iowa's a pretty scary team. They're one that maybe surprised me in a positive way a little bit.
Interesting. We've talked a lot about realignment. Now, that's not going to figure into what you're writing about at this particular time, so I'm going to take you out of the realm of the Big Ten for the moment in terms of this season.
Sure.
But Oregon, Washington, USC, and UCLA come into play starting next year. What will the dynamics of the Big Ten potentially be with the addition of those four schools, and how much more difficult did everybody's job become on both coasts because of it?
Well, I think it became a lot more difficult because, in a lot of ways, it's not just that you have to play USC. I mean, that's an obvious thing. We don't know how the league's going to be aligned. We don't know what the schedule's going to look like. But this year, if I look at these advanced metrics preseason rankings, I mean, Washington and Oregon and USC are top 15 teams. So obviously that makes things a lot more difficult. And then does it become more of an imperative to recruit more nationally, to recruit on the West Coast? I don't know. I don't know how Penn State will approach that. But, you know, we've gotten so used to this idea of catching up to Michigan and Ohio State. That's been the dynamic for so long now that it's not that anymore. Now it becomes a little different. I'm really interested to see what they do in terms of alignment and whatever they do. I guess they're not going to do divisions, it doesn't sound like, but however they do the schedule, it's so fluid. I mean, maybe it'll change next week. I mean, so that's really a wild card.
It's interesting because last Thursday, Mike Rhodes and I were in Hershey for an event. Char Moret was there with us as well. And near the end,
I actually got invited to that, and I was gonna. I had something. I would have gone to that. Oh, check these guys out, but anyway.
Oh, good. Oh, no, it was quite the act. You would have loved it.
of course.
But when it came for my part of the Q&A, near the end, somebody asked me about Oregon and Washington coming in. And I was standing there listening, and as the question came up, there were groans from the crowd. Not about the question, but I think about the fact that Oregon and Washington are coming in. Which I found to be, that kind of reaction is, it's organic, it's raw, and I thought it was very interesting to hear. When you have talked to people, what have they said to you about the addition of Oregon and Washington, which just came out of the blue after the Pac-12 presented a TV contract that nobody wanted?
Yes, that's for sure. Why did they even present that? But anyway, I think the reaction that I've gotten from my readers and just from people that I talk to could be summarized in a collective groan.
Okay.
I think people... One of the things that people, that makes college football special and that people have such an emotional connection to it, I think, is that regional element and the whole element of rivalries and the whole element of you can compete with the buddy that's in the office down the that you talk to at the water cooler every day because he's an alumni of your rival school, and you can compete year round in recruiting and the whole thing. So I think that's getting lost a little bit with this conference realignment, and I have not heard from anybody who's thinking, hey, man, that's going to be awesome when Oregon and Washington are in the league. I haven't heard anybody say that, even though those are great programs. And, maybe I'm going to get to go to Seattle. I've never been to Seattle. I'm going to, you know, that kind of thing. But I think there's a regional element to college football that is almost completely unique in all of American sports, and that I think most people feel is being compromised.
That's a really interesting point, because that has always been, and when Joe tried to put together the Eastern All-Sports Conference, he was thinking about the regionalization part of it. But it has now expanded in such a way where the Big Ten is coast to coast. But it's interesting that you're getting the same reaction. And again, I didn't bring it up. It was a fan asking me the question, and I paused a moment just to kind of gauge the room. And the room was not happy, right? Not with the answer. I mean, I hadn't answered anything yet. But
I have gotten a fair number of email and just general, you know, social media reactions, and it charts exactly with what you're saying. Yeah.
Wow, that is amazing. All right, so back to this football team. You look at the quarterback part of it. You know, this is one of those teams that, quote, has to replace its starting quarterback. So how are you viewing this? What are you going to look for in the opening, let's say, month of the season that tells everybody that that part's on track?
Well, I'm not worried, if I was a Penn State fan, I would not be worried about talent, arm talent with Drew Aller, and poise, because I think he's shown he's got tons of that. The only thing I would say is elite level decision making. That's the thing that sets quarterbacks apart, in my view. And I think that's the thing that we haven't seen enough of Drew Aller to know whether he has it or not. And when he did get thrown into the fire last year at Purdue, that was so early that it almost doesn't count for that. You could see flash. You could see what people are excited about in that tiny little sample size, but you couldn't really see what I'm talking about. The decision making things, the understanding of the offense. You know, that's so critical to me. That's so critical to getting the ball where it needs to go. If he can figure out where the ball needs to go, he's going to be able to get it there. I don't think there's any doubt about that, and I'm not worried about him as a leader, as a poised guy, as a being able to handle the pressure, even though there's a lot of pressure. There's a lot of pressure on Drew Aller. There's no way around that.
Mike, tremendous as always. Really appreciate the time and the insight.
Always good to talk to you, Steve. I appreciate it.
Mike Gross from Lancaster always does a great job covering this team. It's going to be interesting. They have gone through it, and I always say, do you end camp with essentially the same team you started camp with? I mean, that's essential if you want to improve in football and get better as a good football team during the course of the preseason. Do you end camp with essentially the same football team that, in terms of personnel, that you started the camp? With one notable exception, Penn State has. And I think everybody knows what the notable exception is. This essentially is the same group. You know, now, have the freshmen shown to be better? Yes. Have the receivers shown to be better compared to the spring? Absolutely. The spring, a lot of the receivers were up and down. Not during training camp. Let's now add in the caveat. Now that I've seen it in training camp, now I need to see it in a game. And then I need to see it in a second game. You start that way, it confirms everything you saw in training camp. But several of the receivers who were up and down in the spring have been consistent, and I mean consistent at a good level in training camp. Have you been able to play the kind of depth, and what kind of role has that played during your training camp? Important. It stayed that way. And Penn State, a couple times, has had the depth tested in training camp, but then, you know, if somebody was out a day or two, then they got them back. I mean, that's been the key with this team. They've been able to keep, for the most part, the team together. And that's been a key element moving forward as they get ready for the season. Now we'll get to see all of it unfold on Saturday night. And I know James Franklin already had his press conference today talking about the team and the opener. There's always a little bit of mystery in the opener. Some of the mystery deals sometimes with going full speed on special teams. part of the mystery is, you know, let's face it, who knows what changes West Virginia has made in the offseason as to how they want to approach things. I mean, we'll have to see. But does Penn State have the talent and the depth? They have the talent and the depth. Have they been able to keep it intact during the preseason? The big part is, yes, for the most part, they've been able to keep it intact in the preseason. That's really important moving forward. Tony Knopp, final half hour. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you, the other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome back. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, online at sunburymotors.com. Let's now bring in Tony Knopp from the coast. Tony, USC led the charge on all of this. Take us through the backstory.
When people, when their house depreciates in value or something happens, they just have a hard time understanding or appreciating that that's what it is now, right? There's an old saying that the market is the market. It's much like how we're looking at, you know, Penn State grad Saquon Barkley saying, I should be getting historical running back numbers, and the market's coming back and saying, that's not the market anymore. And so he's holding out. That's what happened with the Pac-12 president. They just have this psychological disposition that, well, no, that can't be real. That we can't get $50 million and $30 million, which is the number. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. You know it better than I do. I think the Big 12, when USC was going to poach the four teams after Oklahoma and Texas left, was around $30 million, right?
Yes.
It was like 27 to 31
yes.
million.
Yes.
Yeah. So they were. You have a group of very powerful people who nobody says no to them, sitting in a room saying, "Wait a minute, we could have just bought those four houses for $30 million, and we thought that was nowhere close to enough money, and now you're telling us that's all we can get?" No.
Right.
We need 50. And going back to what you said about Bill Moos, so I'm going to bore the listeners for a second unless they care about this, but in 2011, Larry Scott signs this deal with the $3.5 billion deal, biggest deal in sports. He's going to roll out the Pac-12 networks, even though he has no carriage rights. He completely blunders that. Larry Scott makes $50 million to essentially crater a 100-year-old conference. Mm-hmm. But Bill Moos sits down at the table with Larry Scott and the rest of the and UCLA and USC come, and they do what everybody has done with every league that's formed in the past. And they said, look, we are the stalking horses here. We are the biggest brands. We need a bigger share. And anybody can sit there and say that doesn't seem fair, but it is fair. It's not any different than in the Big Ten, right? Rutgers shouldn't get the same share as Penn State. We just know it, and people know it. The English Premier League was built that way, around the top five teams getting more money. And the NFL, thank goodness for the Maras and the Rooneys and the original owners,
yep.
Because they were the same way. New York and Green Bay were driving all the money, and they were taking more, but they were making sure everything was taken care of. So Bill Moos, who, for your listeners, will recognize him from hiring Scott Frost in Nebraska, he was the guy at Oregon that kind of helped them come to prominence under Phil Knight's time. He hired Michael Oddie, and they got a little more prominent. He is the AD at Washington State at the time, and he comes back and says, no, everybody should get an equal share, and we want to build our sub-brand into national powerhouses. We think Washington State should be a national name. He honestly believed this. And so he demanded and got the teams to vote and the presidents to vote to get the same amount of money for Washington State that goes to USC for football. And he takes the money, and he spends $8 million on Mike Leach every year, and he builds a ridiculous stadium that nobody goes to in Pullman. We talked about this. I believe that was the day that USC was gone. Right? Because at the time, USC is under restriction from the NCAA.
Yep.
They've got the sanctions on them. The team sucks. Lane Kiffin had been fired a year prior. They're down. And now they're getting kicked while they're down. It was a matter of time before we got to this point where USC said, okay, this isn't going to work anymore. This isn't the SEC. This isn't the Big Ten. I mean, the Big Ten has how many nationally prominent brands? You know, Penn State, Ohio State, Michigan. You have a lot of nationally prominent brands.
Yep.
The Pac-12, people on the West Coast may not believe this, but I'm sure your listeners would agree. You really don't have much. Arizona basketball, UCLA basketball, USC football, used to be UCLA football, Washington from time to time, you know, Oregon from time to time. Nobody cares about the rest. Nobody's staying up late to watch Stanford play, you know, Arizona State.
No.
And that's what happens. And so you have these chancellors and these presidents saying, hold on a second. 3 years ago, you were telling us $30 million is nowhere near enough. It's going to evaporate the Big 12, and we're going to go take four of their teams. And now you're telling me I have to accept $30 million?
No. Right. Exactly. I mean, and that's exactly right. And that's what it comes down to. Now, and I'd like to point, to my knowledge, I've never met Carol Fultz. I do know what her reputation is, though, and she is, quote, not a shrinking violet. In other words, she's a very, I mean, she has a backbone to her, and she has opinions.
She does, and she's done a great job for USC. That's the important statement here. In the end, everybody goes back down to the money, and that's what happened here. You have, I mean, if you think about how ludicrous the timeline of this and how this happened is, it is a case study in selfish idiocy. You had these 10 member schools. This is back before Colorado, Utah joined. So these 10 member schools who spend decades demanding an equal share with the national brands, demanding that Oregon State basketball should get the same revenue share as Arizona basketball, demanding that USC football needs to share their money with Cal, who has some of the worst football facilities in the country. They're not even spending it. And you spend decades saying this. You crater your own conference fighting for this. And then the minute the conference looks like it's on shaky ground, Oregon and Washington, the two schools who believed they were closest to USC and UCLA, take a cut rate share to join the Big Ten.
Mm-hmm.
So you literally spend decades saying, I am worth exactly as much as these two schools, until Kevin Warren and Carol Fulton and everybody, the big kids, get involved and they say, you're not. And you can either take what you're worth, because the market is the market, or you can go play in the Mountain West.
And they took And they took the long-term play with the next contract, where they're going to get an equal share down the road. That's what they're counting on. Apple offered $23 million, then kicked it up to $25 million. I don't think people realize, Tony, how tough a negotiator Apple is, and they are, again, let's go back to the term shrinking violet. That's not Apple.
No. So what's fascinating about Apple in all of this, and what's fascinating, I mean, and to get back to the share piece for the listeners, Stanford and Cal said they'd take nothing in their first year in the ACC.
That's right.
So you went from cratering your 100-year-old conference because you demanded every single penny that UCLA and USC got to, I'll take nothing, I just want to be on the team.
Yep.
That is shockingly idiotic from two supposedly prominent universities. Aren't you think tanks? This is you guys have a graduate school of business at Stanford that's internationally prominent. Couldn't brought somebody in to help you out with this one. You ended up with nothing. I mean, talk about buffoonery. And then you went and publicly pitched yourself out to the ACC, who said no.
Yep.
I mean, you're supposed to be the Director's Cup champion, right? So Stanford has won 26 of the last 29 Director's Cup. This is the who wins the most national championships across all sports. Because Stanford dominates in the Olympic sports, and they always have. Two, you're going to play in the Mountain West?
Yeah.
I mean, how does that look for recruits? You know how we were going to USC and UCLA and Arizona? We're going to Boise State now.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's go to Fort Collins. Have a good time.
Enjoy it. Yeah. So the crazy thing about the Apple point, so to your point with Apple is, one thing that's getting lost in all this is Apple doesn't just make up dollars. If they didn't get this deal, they're not done.
Mm-hmm.
They're not done. They have budget set aside, and they have identified this as a way that they want to continue to build in their live events portfolio. So you better believe that the Big Ten's talking to them. You better believe that the SEC's talking to them about streaming rights, about how do we work around contracts so we don't end up in a position like the ACC is. Which, by the way, we've been talking forever about that grant of rights. How excited is the ACC about that grant of rights right now? Because without it, Florida State is long gone, and Clemson's following them.
Well, I've said this, two parts to the grant of rights. Number one, if it was so easy to break, why are Texas and Oklahoma paying $50 million each between grant of rights and exit fee to get out of the last year of the deal? And number two, Florida State's been grumbling about this for 18 months. If you can't find it in 18 months, the key sentence that can get you out of it, it's not there.
It's not there. And 2036, that's 13 more years, my friend.
Yep.
You got a long way to go, Florida State. A long way to go.
And the numbers are stark. It's a $120 million exit fee, and the total media rights over 13 years involving Florida State is $500 million on the grant of rights. They would have to negotiate an incredible sweetheart deal. You're talking $500 million when it's all said and done to get to 2036, because every Florida State home game, if they just break it and go, would all revert to the ACC.
Yep, every single one. And so you know that Apple, who knows people that we don't know, is involved in every one of these talks.
Yep.
Every one of them. So what the Big 12 did that was so smart is they went and hired the mega players. They went and hired William Morris. For the listeners who don't know who William Morris is, William Morris Endeavor, William Morris bought Endeavor. Endeavor was Ari Emanuel's firm. The listeners who watched Entourage will know who Ari Gold is. It's that firm.
Yes.
Right? He called in, they called in the hitters. Brett Yarmark showed up and said, I'm not going to goof around with this. I'm going to pay the people who can get meetings I can't get, and we are going to turn this into a power conference. And he did a great job of selling to the universities what that share was going to be, and now he's sitting great. He got Colorado back. I mean, look, Dion's only going to be there for 2 or 3 years.
Sure.
But it's a good win to get Colorado back. They were originally a Big 8 member. And you get Arizona basketball, which really helps with Texas leaving. It plugs in that rival that Kansas needs on the basketball side.
Yep.
But you and I both know this is all about football.
It's all about
basketball. Doesn't even come up in the conversation on this.
Well, what's interesting, and your mark has nothing to do with what I'm about to say, but if you notice, where is the grant of rights filed for the Big 12 where you get kind of that kind of corporate relief that you need? The grant of rights for the Big 12 is filed in Delaware. Which is, okay, a lot of people don't realize that. That's where it's filed. It's in Delaware. Okay, so now
in Delaware, which is where my business is incorporated.
Yes.
For the same reason.
That's exactly why I brought it up, because I knew that. And there are reasons why you do that. Right? There are reasons why a business does that and incorporates in Delaware. So
it's corporate protection. It's very difficult for the states to get involved, because what gets lost in a lot of this work, the one thing that shocked me, where I was a little bit wrong, I'm wrong a lot, so I'm not defending myself, but you remember we talked about this, we said the biggest problem Oregon and Washington are going to have are, it's going to be Oregon State. Because Oregon and Oregon State are tied at the hip, just like Washington State are. It's been pretty well known that Washington State wants to move to the MWC, right? They're more local to it, you know, Idaho's right there, it just makes more sense for them. But Oregon State didn't. Oregon State is a powerhouse in baseball.
Yep.
They don't want to move to the Mountain West.
Yep. Nope.
And now what? Somehow Oregon got away from them. Somehow the legislature allowed Oregon to separate from Oregon State. I'm not that surprised with Cal and UCLA, just because Cal has shown that they don't care about football. Right? Mm-hmm. They've made it pretty clear that football is just not going to be an investment for them. And for the listeners who don't know, Stanford Stadium used to fit 90,000 people. It fits 35,000 now.
Yeah.
I mean, they just blatantly came out and said, we're going to cut the attendance in half. People aren't coming.
Right. Well, in fact, that's where, when it was 90,000 seats, they hosted the Super Bowl. They hosted Super Bowl 19.
Right.
All right. So
49ers.
Yep, 49ers beat the Dan Marino's Super Bowl appearance. They beat the Dolphins. So what now?
Right. Roger Craig.
Right, right. Who should be in the Hall of Fame, by the way. So what now for Oregon State, Washington State, Stanford, Cal? I know Rick Neuheisel, who's very passionate about the Pac 10, 12, 8,
whatever,
because he grew up in it. He's coached in it at two different places. So it means a lot to him. Is there any way in a package, in a merger, they can survive and at least keep the Pac whatever name?
Yes, but here's the problem. The chip that the Pac has is that they are still considered a Power 5 conference.
Right.
And there's still a negotiation going around about automatic bids in Power 5 conferences. And there's the Rose Bowl. The thing that gets lost a lot here is the Rose Bowl. The reason this all happened is because this was really the last year the Rose Bowl had the ability to say, I want it to be, Big Ten, Pac-10, right? That part of the contract expired after this last game. And now it's going to make it easier. The Rose Bowl is basically saying, look, we're part of the CFP now. That tradition is not going to be a part of what we're doing anymore.
Right.
So, the problem is, we talk about this a lot. We talk about major markets, but then we talk about the actual traction that people have in a major market. And so the schools that are thrown around pretty regularly are kind of like the mid-major that want to be bigger, the Fresno State, the San Diego State. I mean, I would challenge anybody in Pennsylvania to even point to me on a map where Fresno is. Right? I mean, we know where it is out here. I used to drive through there. But
right.
Fresno, they use a lot of loose numbers to say, well, the entire valley is technically Fresno, therefore we have 600,000, viewer homes signed up as opposed to 200,000, but it's not. I mean, it's a really wide base that they're trying to get to. Boise State, schools that you would know if you're watching late night games, but they're just not nationally prominent. So the biggest problem that they have and why they really need some kind of merger with the ACC is the bid to the CFP eventually. They don't want to become a Group of Five school. The problem for your listeners that may not know is that, the ACC, unlike many conferences, actually has fairly interesting academic requirements.
Yeah.
And Washington State and Oregon State don't meet it. It's the same thing as the funky NC State thing. Like, NC State could never go to the Big Ten.
Right.
Because they're not AAU or AUU or whatever. They're not licensed.
Yep.
Yeah. And so there's Washington State and Oregon State. They could never make the case to get them into the ACC because they're just not prominent schools when it comes to, the academic side. And then the one that's really lost in the wash here is Arizona State.
Yeah.
I mean, the number five market in the country, it's more populated than just about anywhere now. It's growing faster than anything.
Yep.
They should be a superpower, but they just can't stop fumbling over themselves. And now where are you? Right, you're thinking, man, we've had some hard times at ASU since Jake Plummer left, and now we're in the Big 12. What the hell just happened?
Yeah,
yeah.
Well, the next time we talk, I want to. Something that is lost in this is that networks have paid out so much money for rights. There is a limit as to how far you can go, which the Pac-12 found out. Because ESPN desperately wants to keep the NBA contract, and they want to keep the college football playoff contract in some form, at least have the semifinals, the finals, maybe an opening round. But see, I want to get into the next time we talk about these network entities trying to make sure that they balance their books while also making big bids on rights and how they prioritize who is a must-have versus nice-to-have.
You and I talked about this, right, buddy? It's going to come down to what the NFL and the English Premier League did.
Yep.
Right? There's haves and there's have-nots. And if you allow that have and have-nots to get too wide, well, the have-nots start to disappear. And you start to create super conferences, this looks exactly like the English Premier League,
mm-hmm.
where the top teams just eventually broke away from 100 years of tradition and created the English Premier League.
right? And so we're eventually headed towards what it seems what you said years ago on the air, right? We're all in a 64-team conference, and you've got your mega conferences with your divisions and your playoffs and your national championship, which in the end, to me, seems like the most logical, you know, endpoint anyways. I played a non-money sport in school, so I went to USC to play volleyball and basketball. Basketball was a money sport, volleyball was not.
Yeah.
Those football players, I was friends with all of them. You remember many of them. Carson Palmer was in my Bible study. I knew Barry Zito. Yeah. Chris Claiborne was my lab partner.
Yeah.
And he got drafted seventh overall.
Yep. Yeah.
They are there to study football.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody hand-wringing and saying, oh, well, this is an academic institution. You can make just as much money, have just as much impact on the world, and have a great vocation in football as you can in anthropology.
Mm-hmm.
It is a job. So this hand-wringing about, I can't believe USC is going to fly all the way across the country to, why not? If they're going to end up being scouts or coaches or working on the business side of an NFL team, that's what they're going to do. The Philadelphia Eagles staff flies across the country on the weekends.
Yeah.
They balance their work with needing to do that. Isn't college for that, to prepare your vocation for the real world?
Exactly.
So I think I think we've got a couple of things to talk about, but I'm on the other side of that. I think these football players, this is a good thing for them.
I am too. I think at the end it's not going to be as complicated as people think. And there's a way with the other sports to make it work. My friend, the fact that you're safe and sound is, and your family is safe and sound is all it means to me. But it is, man, that went fast, didn't it?
Oh goodness, yeah. I enjoyed it. And next thing you know, we're going to be talking after you guys pound out West Virginia, right? You got them in a couple weeks.
Yeah. Yep, 2 weeks from Saturday. So. I think I'll go to practice.
I cannot wait to see your quarterback. This is, if you guys have a quarterback, this could be your year.
You're going to like him. You're going to like him.
All right.
You're going to like him.
Okay?
My friend. Always a pleasure. I cannot wait until the next conversation.
All right, buddy. We'll talk soon.
The great Tony Knopp. Great to have him on the show. Looking forward to being back with you tomorrow. Neil Coulong is going to join us on the show. The cuts have been made in the NFL. Thanks for joining us today. Brought to you by Sunbury Motors on News Radio 1070 WKOK.